the Republican presidential frontrunner. Romney got 40% of the vote. Considering he faced five rivals, Romney says he's proud of the showing.
The president unopposed only got 80% last night.
Ron Paul came in second with 23%.
I called Governor Romney a short while ago before he gave his talk and congratulate him because he certainly had a clear-cut victory, but we're nibbling at his heels.
All six candidates now have their sights on South Carolina for the next primary, January 21st. Mississippi's outgoing governor is under increased scrutiny this morning. Hours before his successor was sworn in yesterday, Haley Barbour approved pardons for nearly 200 people, including 14 convicted murderers. Randy Walker was shot by one of those, David Gatlin. Walker says the pardons put him and other victims in danger.
We are in jail now, and David is out of jail. We will forever be looking over our shoulder, wondering if today is the day that David decided that he was going to finish what he started.
No comment from Barbour. An Iranian nuclear scientist is dead after a bomb blast under his car in Tehran. CNN's Ivan Watson reports it's the latest in a string of attacks on scientists, which Iran blames on Israel.
No evidence has been shown. Instead, there have been images broadcast on Iranian state media of this audacious daylight assassination in the streets of the Iranian capital.
Iran's president heads to Cuba today for talks with that country's President Raul Castro as well as Fidel Castro. Both countries are struggling under U.S. economic sanctions and share similar interests in oil. A carton of OJ could soon cost you more. Prices are up on worries the U.S. government could ban Brazilian oranges after a low-level fungicide was found by a juice company. For news anytime, go to CNN.com. This is CNN Radio.
Jay Farner here. Happy New Year from Quicken Loans. Do you want to get a jump start on your finances for 2012? We close a majority of our home loans in 30 days or less, so you can purchase a new home or save money by refinancing and wrap up those New Year's resolutions in record time. Here's the best part. Interest rates are still historically low. The rate today on a 30-year fixed mortgage is an amazing 3.875%, APR 4.17%. And we're proud to announce that for the second year in a row, J.D. Power & Associates ranked Quicken Loans highest in customer satisfaction for primary mortgage origination in the United States. That rate again is 3.875%, APR 4.17%. Take a few minutes out of your busy day. Call Quicken Loans at 800-401-0027. That's 800-401-0027. Or go to quickenloans.com.
For J.D. Power & Associates award information, visit jdpower.com. Call us for cost information. Equal housing lender. Licensed in all 50 states. Nationwide licensing number 3030.
Next year's federal pay raise will be worth less than $400 for the typical civil servant. So is that a joke, an insult, or a ray of sunshine? This is Federal News Radio senior correspondent Mike Causey. Here's the deal. The president proposed a 1.6% pay hike for uniformed military personnel and a 0.5% raise for white-collar federal civil servants. Federal unions, who supported the president during the campaign, say in public that it's disappointing. In private, they're mad enough to chew nails. I mean, real nails. But some people say this may be an opportunity. They were afraid the White House would propose yet another year without a pay raise. And they believe the old bipartisan coalition formed during the Clinton years and extended through the Bush presidency will saddle up again and fight both the White House and the Republican-controlled House to get both groups the same 1.6% raise. So how does that work? Check out my column, Mike Causey's Federal Report, at federalnewsradio.com.
Today, my journey to help save people money on car insurance brought me to our nation's capital. I was taking a stroll around a mall when I met a very nice gentleman from Ohio who asked me a question. What kind of word is Geico anyway? An excellent question, I replied. I told him that Geico isn't a word, it's an acronym, and it stands for Government Employees Insurance Company. I explained how Geico actually got its start 75 years ago to help federal employees save money on car insurance. Interesting, the man replied. But today, Geico saves lots of people money on car insurance, including me. Have you ever thought about changing the name? I said. It's a thought. But Gecko sounds like Geico. If we change the name, I might be out of a job. We strolled a bit more, stopped for some tea, and we both agreed. It's probably best to keep the name just like it is. Geico.
To get a free rate quote, go to geico.com, then buy online or over the phone. If you're a federal employee or belong to an association like Big, Few, Young Government Leaders, and others, you may qualify for a special discount. Contact Geico today to request your special federal savings.
The Department of Defense faces some big changes in the coming years. I'm Federal News Radio's DoD reporter, Jared Serbu. We help you track those changes every Wednesday afternoon from 2 to 3 with On DoD. Each week, we'll talk one-on-one with defense experts and senior managers about the policies, programs, and innovations that affect warfighters and how the military will continue to meet its mission. That's On DoD, Wednesday afternoons at 2, only on Federal News Radio, 1500 AM and federalnewsradio.com.
Looking for an interview heard on one of our shows? It's easy to find on the new federalnewsradio.com, the best source for news for and about the federal community.
Welcome to Your Turn. This is Mike Causey. Glad to have you with us as we are here every Wednesday morning. And I got a good show today. We're going to be leading off with Carol Bonacero. She's president of the Senior Executives Association. Very important outfit, a very important part of government. And then the second half of the show, we're going to have the two Steves, Steve Watkins, editor of Federal Times, Steve Losey, a senior writer, and Sean Riley are going to give us the latest on what's going on in the world of federal people, and there is a lot going on. Carol, thank you for coming in today. Appreciate this very much. I know you have a lot of things going on. The administration or the OOPM or somebody has proposed a new, standardized rating system for members of the senior executive service. And before we go into that, there's like 7,400 career members of the SES, and their pay range is what?
Well, the cap on their pay range is $179,700, but actually the average pay last year was $167,000. So it's quite a bit under that.
Okay, cap. And these are the executives that run the government on a day-to-day basis, regardless of who's president, regardless of who's the cabinet secretary or the administrator. The SES was set up by the Carter administration way back when, and the idea was they took the grades 15, 16, and 17, the GS grades.
16, 17, and 18.
16, 17, 18, I'm sorry. Yeah. And took those and migrated them into the SES, and the idea was that it would be a way to reward people better, a way to monitor people better, and to make the service people mobile and be able to move around not only from agency to agency but geographically. How's that worked?
Well, the idea was indeed increased reward, potential reward for increased risk. And primarily what we've gotten over the years is the increased risk, not as much of the increased reward. But the idea of mobility, really, the basic reason for it had to do with the fact that when these people were in the so-called super grades, it was extremely difficult to move them around within an agency because of their job classifications. So when the idea was if you put them into the senior executive service, political leadership can put them where they're needed within the agency. That was the more immediate concern, more so than the notion of musical chairs throughout government.
Did you get a feeling that, and this can happen any time they make a big change, that the administration at the time was trying to maybe get a little bit of a stranglehold on the senior service of the bureaucracy?
Well, that's an interesting question. What was the real motivation?
Yeah.
I think the idea was to make it certainly a little less hidebound. I think most of us at the time, and I hate to think of how long ago it was, but most of us at the time were quite excited about the notion that there would be the potential for increased reward because we felt that we did have the capability, and it would be awfully nice, for example, to have performance awards and to have certainly a presidential rank award program.
This proposal from the administration, what would it do? What's the intent of it?
The new one, the idea is that agency, as you look across the federal government, although there is a provision where agencies do have to take their SES performance management programs to OPM and OMB to have them certified, that there's a lot of variation in them. And so if an executive, for example, wants to move from one agency to another, The receiving agency or the potential hiring agency might say, gee, it's awfully hard for us to determine how this person's performance relates to the performance of folks we have on board because the system's so different. So the idea is that there will be five uniform performance standards, and they are the executive core qualifications, which are the qualifications that you have to meet to get into the SES. So it does make sense. Arguably, if you have to demonstrate you meet these qualifications to get in, you ought to be demonstrating them once you are in. The other thing it does is provide uniform definitions of the various rating levels, not only written descriptions, but numerical scoring.
The different administrations treat the government differently. The Bush administration was accused of being anti-union, and the National Security Performance Personnel System was given as evidence of that. And once the Democrats came in and once the Republicans came in and took control of the House, they rolled it back. So that's now gone. Do you notice an attitude difference from administration to administration? Say, go back to Bill Clinton to, or maybe the two Bush presidents, and Bill Clinton and President Obama.
Yeah, I think we do, and I'll cite the famous. It's been noted over and over in Bush 1 when he invited all senior executives to Constitution Hall and sent a very clear message that he valued the career service and he viewed them as essential partners for the administration. And the executives who were there at the time have never forgotten that. And it wasn't that they weren't going to do a good job. Without that, it was, as most people, they appreciated the attention. They appreciated the recognition of their value. Unfortunately, we haven't seen that kind of clear message, for example, from the Obama administration.
Are they, and I forget now which whether it was the Obama administration, the last Bush years of the Bush administration, or which, but it seems like they've been hiding some of these executives and their achievements under a basket and not wanting to come out and at least publicly announce rewards and good things that people have done. Is that your sense?
Oh, yeah. It's quite certain this began in the Obama administration. If you go to the OPM website, for example, you cannot find the winners of the Presidential Rank Award. I think there is a lot of concern in the administration. This is my impression, that because of the substantial dollar amount associated with these awards, that there's a reluctance to have them receive much attention, that in these economically difficult days. But the fact is, I think they're extremely easy to defend when you look at what these people have accomplished. You know, because you come to our banquet each year for the distinguished rank, that the winners a year ago saved the government a total of $34 billion. I think that's easy to defend.
And the awards that are not being publicized now are, what, $20,000 or $10,000?
Well, it's 35%. The distinguished rank receives 35% of salary.
Okay.
You know, for many, many years until we got the law changed, the maximum was $25,000.
Yeah.
Which, you know, in 1978 was a lot of money, but by 2010 it was much smaller percentage. So, you know, they're not Wall Street bonuses.
Well, I know I have been to nearly all of the banquets you have each year in the State Department. It's a wonderful black tie affair. And as many as I've been to, it's still jaw-dropping just looking around at the people at the table you're at. They may be winners, they may be spouses, but looking at what they've done is just, it's, most people, most Americans, I suspect, don't even know that the government is in the business of doing this sort of thing. But
well, I think that, you know, in that regard, the administration's missing a real opportunity to show them what government actually does for the American public, because you're quite right. These people are astonishing.
Need to take a short break here. When we get back, I want to ask you about some attitude changes in the administration. Be right back here on WFED 1500 AM.
Meeting mission goals through IT modernization, brought to you by General Dynamics IT.
The National Oceanic and Atmospheric Administration has become the biggest federal agency yet to move its entire workforce to the cloud. NOAA's finished the migration of all 25,000 of its employees to email and collaboration services provided through Google Apps for Government. NOAA and its vendors completed the huge transition in just 6 months, and the agency estimates it saved 50% of the cost it would have incurred if it had built its own email system in-house.
General Dynamics IT delivers the full strength of enterprise IT to drive innovation like infrastructure consolidation and modernization, cross-domain information sharing, cloud computing, Web 2.0, and a constant flow of new applications and IT services. General Dynamics IT helps government, military, and commercial organizations achieve new levels of productivity and mission effectiveness. General Dynamics IT brings together the expertise, technology, and best practices to deliver secure enterprise IT solutions. Go to GDIT.com to learn more. That's GDIT.com.
Engineering, information technology, and intelligence professionals. When you are powered by innovation and guided by integrity, everything is possible. We invite you to explore a future with the largest provider of IT services, systems integration, and training to the U.S. government. Lockheed Martin will be attending several job fair events the rest of this month in D.C., Maryland, and Virginia. Stop by our booth to discuss opportunities available with programs in a number of D.C. metro locations and overseas. We are seeking cleared individuals with expertise in engineering, information technology, and intelligence analysis. For details on these opportunities and our events, or to chat live with one of our recruiters, visit www.lockheedmartinjobs.com/WTOP and click on events. Everything is possible with Lockheed Martin. Remember, visit www.lockheedmartinjobs.com/WTOP and click on events. Lockheed Martin is an equal opportunity employer.
How is the U.S. Government Accountability Office working to put the country on a sustainable fiscal path? What is GAO doing to assist Congress and ensure accountability to the American people? Join host Michael Keegan as he explores these questions and much more with his very special guest, Gene Todaro, Comptroller General of the United States and head of the U.S. Government Accountability Office, next week on the Business of Government Hour.
WashingtonCaps.com is the destination for behind-the-scenes coverage of your Washington Capitals. Get the most comprehensive Caps coverage with in-depth previews and analysis for every game, and blog, Twitter, and Facebook updates all day, every day. Check out Caps 365, where you can view all the best goals, saves, and hits, and access exclusive player interviews, press conferences, and much more. Check it all out on WashingtonCaps.com and do your part in building America's hockey capital.
America's top show about planning for retirement is on 1500 AM WFED. Sunday mornings at 8, it's the Financial Safari. Each week, America's income planner, Coach Pete DeRuda, sits down with father-daughter duo from Northern Virginia, retirement planners Don and Joe O'Rourke from O'Rourke Asset Management. Sunday mornings at 8, it's the Financial Safari on 1500 AM WFED.
As agencies await the release of the federal budget for fiscal year 13, they must learn to do more with less. To meet OMB's Shared First model, agencies need to accurately measure the effectiveness of their IT portfolio beyond cloud and the FDCCI. Join FCA Bethesda on January 18th at the Bethesda North Marriott as agencies outline three key areas of governance: creating IT efficiencies and cost savings, policy and trends, and IT oversight. Register today at FCABethesda.org/JANBreakfast.
Welcome back to Your Turn. This is Mike Causey. I'm talking with Carol Bonacero. She's president of the Senior Executives Association. And Carol, before with the break, we were talking about this new administration proposal to sort of standardize the performance system that's used to rank these 7,400 career executives, the people who really run the federal agencies between administration to administration and while they're actually in office. And did I hear you correctly say that it's a five-level, 500-point system?
Yes, it's a five-level system, so all agencies have to have level one being unsatisfactory and then minimally satisfactory, fully successful, exceeds fully successful, and outstanding. So there's a total of 500 points that can be assessed, so to speak, but to gain an outstanding rating, you have to achieve 475 points, which becomes virtually a walk on water.
Able to leap tall buildings in a single bound.
Absolutely.
Uh-huh. Well, I have not seen this in detail, but there are 500 areas that
It's when the five performance standards are spelled out.
Yeah.
Which are things like getting results, leading people, business acumen, et cetera. Those are each assessed a certain percentage. In other words, we're going to look at your ability to gain clear-cut results as, let's say, 60% or 50%. That's what it will count, the amount it will count towards your ultimate rating, and let's say leading people may be 10%. So whatever rating you manage to achieve in that particular standing then contributes towards overall. You do an average, and that's how you get to the
well,
points.
These,
probably clear as mud, isn't
it? Well, people, but I'm still trying to master this after many years. The people at the Senior Executive Service are at the top of the career ladders of federal agencies. They have counterparts at the CIA and FBI, I know, and all agencies have some representation of SES, all executive branch agencies. But who grades them? Who ranks them? I mean, if they're the top,
who ranks the heads of the agency?
No, the SES people. I mean, who decides
who ranks the SES?
How well they're doing?
Well, their immediate supervisors. So the politicals, mm-hmm. by and large. I mean, there are some senior executives who may be rated by other senior executives who happen to be, let's say, for example, at the deputy assistant secretary level or whatever. But by and large, yes, it's political. And their rating does have to go up the line and be approved ultimately. And it does go to a performance review board, which is made up of a majority of career executives. So there are some protections within the system, but they're certainly not absolute because to some degree, no matter how hard any administration works to make a system as objective as possible and as numerical as possible, there's always subjectivity in a rating.
Do you have any ideas of the turnover in the SES?
We don't. I wish that we did. We used to some time ago when OPM published data annually, but right now we're waiting for the SES survey, the results of the SES survey that OPM did last fall.
And that'll give numbers?
Yeah, it should, because that is one of the questions, although unfortunately only about 60% of all senior executives responded to it, so
Well, that's a lot.
I wish it had been 100%.
That's very high, though. If I'm a senior executive member of the SES, have been for 10 years, prime of life, ready to go, gone through a couple of administrations, both as a federal worker and then later as a federal executive, and I get a boss that just doesn't like the cut of my jib, or for some reason, unbeknownst to me, he or she decides I've got to go. How can they do that, and what recourse does the executive have?
The quick answer is yes, they can do that, and the recourse is relatively little.
Really? Okay.
Yeah.
Do you see this more than you care to?
Unfortunately, yes. And there are lots of ways to make someone's life miserable, whether you give them fewer assignments, whether you don't pay attention to them, whether you reassign them to a job that makes no sense. So there are many ways to motivate someone to retire. And as I say, there's no effective recourse. The only real recourse someone has is to allege an improper personnel action, which basically you have to prove discrimination or political interference, and that's extraordinarily difficult. And most people to whom this happens want to get on with their lives, and they have no interest in washing an agency's dirty linen.
I was in a situation once where an organization never fired anyone, but the turnover was rather high. And they would find out, you know, are you afraid of spiders? And if so, well, you're going to be in charge of spider maintenance for the building. And so people were always resigning and whatnot. Yet again, another place where they fired people almost on a weekly basis. But in the government, the idea is to drive them mad and run them out.
Well, that is one way of putting it. I mean, I've often been asked, if you do look at the data, that so few people in the SES are terminated. But they don't have to be, because they are encouraged to retire. You know, if you, for example, if you order them on a geographic reassignment that they refuse, they're removed from the SES. And they really have no recourse. So it's not terribly difficult. I mean, you know, if we have, getting back to this performance management system, you can develop any system you like, make it as good as you like, but ultimately the acid test is implementation. And, you know, in our view, give someone the performance standards that make sense, that are fair, give them an opportunity to meet them, and then judge them fairly at the end of the year on, in fact, their results. That way you have confidence in the system. But unfortunately, too often, it's not done that way.
Do you talk about geographic assignments? Do you have an idea of how many of the SES people are in the Washington area vis-a-vis the field?
It's approximately two-thirds.
Two-thirds are here.
Yeah.
So there are places for San Francisco and Houston and whatnot where you do have SES people out of the field.
Certainly.
Okay. Would this new system proposed by the administration, I guess the idea is to standardize the performance rating system so that if I'm at Interior and I'm looking at GSA and they have a different system, it's hard for them to judge my effectiveness. It's hard for me to know how well I do over there. If they equalize this, will it make you think it'll increase the number of geographic assignments? And is that
not necessarily for two reasons? First, even with some uniformity, an agency or department, one from the other, can still be different because they'll put different weights on different standards. But secondly, I think mobility depends on a lot more than that. And there are a number of other facts. We've never done anything to really make it, to facilitate moving from one agency to another, to facilitate agencies identifying the talent they need within the SES core in other agencies. So this alone won't do it.
But the idea of mobility, and I know increasingly in the private sector, you hear younger people talking about they have to be mobile because it's considered part of the career path. If they remain in a job for 3 years or longer, they're considered a loser, or they've peaked, and that they have to punch their ticket and go. Is it that way in government? Is it becoming that way?
To some degree, it is becoming that way. Certainly, the Office of the Director of National Intelligence is making that a requirement. Defense Department, I think, is making it a requirement. I'm not sure it's taken hold yet. I think the issue, though, of mobility, there are really two reasons for it. One, indeed, is to prepare someone to move up, and the other is to keep them professionally revitalized. There's a good way to do this, and places like Department of the Navy have done it very well, where they take a look at all of their folks, their experience, their capabilities, their interests, and then they look at the department or agency's needs for future and current needs and look and see, gee, well, you know, Joe might be a good candidate for that job, but he needs to get some experience in X or Y. And so they manage the Corps, I think, more intelligently. And also what figures into that system is the executive's own needs or desires, including family issues, for example, that might get in the way of being reassigned geographically.
It's interesting when you talk about agencies that do things right. Navy tends to be at the top very often. Thank you, Carol Bonacero, for being here. Appreciate it. We'll have you back when this new system comes out, and we'll find out how many people make it to the 475 out of 500-point level. Thank you. We'll be right back, and we'll be talking with folks from the Federal Times.
Today, my journey to help save people money on car insurance brought me to our nation's capital. I was taking a stroll around the mall when I met a very nice gentleman from Ohio who asked me a question. What kind of word is Geico anyway? An excellent question, I replied. I told him that Geico isn't a word, it's an acronym, and it stands for Government Employees Insurance Company. I explained how Geico actually got its start 75 years ago to help federal employees save money on car insurance. Interesting, the man replied. But today, Geico saves lots of people money on car insurance, including me. Have you ever thought about changing the name? I said. It's a thought. But Gecko sounds like Geico. If we change the name, I might be out of a job. We strolled a bit more, stopped for some tea, and we both agreed. It's probably best to keep the name just like it is. Geico.
To get a free rate quote, go to geico.com, then buy online or over the phone. If you're a federal employee or belong to an association like Big, Few, Young Government Leaders, and others, you may qualify for a special discount. Contact Geico today to request your special federal savings.
I have this dream where I'm the head of an army of cybersecurity engineers fighting cyber terrorists around the world. My strategies lead to real-world applications that are shutting down black hats and bringing them to justice. Government agencies and multinational corporations are seeking me out to... Hang on. This isn't some fantasy. This is exactly what my doctorate in information assurance from Capital College is preparing me for.
The online Doctor of Science degree in information assurance at Capital gives you absolute validation as an authority on cybersecurity and safeguarding information assets. Capital College is recognized as a national center of academic excellence in information assurance education by the NSA and DHS.
My dream is becoming a reality because of Capital College. It isn't for everyone, but it's perfect for me.
For a virtual info session on graduate programs at Capital College, visit capital-college.edu/radio. That's capital with an O, -college.edu/radio.
And now the Federal Living Report, brought to you by WEPA.
Are you seeing more empty desks at your agency? The Office of Personnel Management says a retirement wave that usually begins in January started a few months early. More agencies are giving their online training and senior executive service development programs a boost. But if your agency hasn't done any of those things, you're not alone. A poll by the Society for Human Resource Management found less than a quarter of organizations nationwide have formal succession plans.
Attention new federal employees. WEPA is currently offering up to $100,000 of life insurance on a guaranteed basis to those individuals within 180 days of their original federal hire date. No medical exam or physician's reports required. WEPA, a nonprofit association founded in 1943, provides life insurance at rates significantly less than the federal program. WEPA also offers premium refunds and a college scholarship program. Visit WAEPA.org to learn more. Once again, WAEPA.org.
Relive the buzzer beaters, dunks, and times shared with friends and family in buff and blue at the homecoming game versus St. Joseph's on Saturday, February 18th. Join Colonials legends including 2012 Hall of Fame inductees Chris Monroe and Shantae Rogers and alumni from across the country at the Charles E. Smith Center to reconnect with GW Athletics and enjoy Atlantic 10 basketball. Tickets are still on sale, so visit gwsports.com or call 202-994-7325 today.
It may sound impossible, but engineers at Virginia Tech are designing a car for the blind, not a car that drives itself, one in which the driver has control. A regular car is being equipped with numerous sensors like laser rangefinders and cameras that act like its eyes. Dennis Hong, a Virginia Tech professor, says a computer can turn that sensor data into a virtual map of the surrounding area.
The critical part is, how do we convey these vast amounts of information real time to a person, an operator who cannot see?
Non-visual interfaces like 3D sound and puffs of air give information about speed and surroundings. Other cues provide guidance, like the drive grip.
This is a glove that you put on your hand, and there's tiny vibrating motors on the knuckle part. So depending on the pattern of the vibration, it gives instructions how to turn the steering wheel.
Hong says new technologies developed in making cars for the blind could lead to safer devices in everyone's car. More at nae.edu/radio. With the National Academy of Engineering, Randy Atkins, Federal News Radio, 1500 AM.
We're on. Hey, Mike Causey, welcome back to your turn. I have the three wise men here with me today. Steve Watkins, editor of the Federal Times, Steve Losey, senior writer, and Sean Riley, another senior writer of the Federal Times. Gentlemen, thank you for coming over here, making the trek from Virginia today. Got so much stuff going on. Maybe you could tell me what you're working on, what you featured, and just go with it. Want to start out with Steve Watkins?
Yeah, sure. Good to be with you, Mike. Well, of course, the big news of the year is essentially, unfortunately, a continuation of what we've been going through last year, only I think it'll probably accelerate, if anything. But Steve Losey just had a story on the website this morning about another buyout, GSA. I think we're going to be seeing a lot more of those. Sean Riley wrote a story in our paper this week about the 2012 budget cuts and how those are shaking out amongst federal agencies. Federal managers are starting to see now the details of what was passed in the omnibus appropriation bill at the end of the year last year. So we're going to be seeing a lot more resizing, reorganization, streamlining of federal agencies as they start accommodating a much tighter, more austere budget environment for not only 2012, but we're expecting also to see some pretty startling budget cuts in the 2013 proposal. So I think we can expect a lot more of that.
I'm so confused in this. You have the omnibus, which has happened, which is law, and as you say, people are going through it. And are there still some budgets to be approved?
I don't – for 2012, you mean? No.
Okay, so that's all done, and they are starting to figure out where they are. So that's why you're getting these buyout offers. This is in lieu of what? In lieu of layoffs or furloughs?
That's why. That's how, for example, the U.S. Agriculture Department this week announced that it will be closing around 250, 260 field offices, research labs, that kind of thing. And the Ag Secretary Tom Vilsack did portray it. You know, they began offering early outs last year, and he did portray this and additional efficiency moves as an option. You know, as an alternative to essentially riffing people or furloughing them. So yeah, they're trying to get ahead of the curve sort of proactively begin cutting costs to minimize the impact on employees.
One of the things, if the past is prologue, is when you had buyouts, whether accompanied by a reduction, not a reduction in force, or early out and a buyout, you have an X number of people that take it. But when the economy is bad, which it is, the number of takers goes down. It's almost self-defeating. And then you have to look at reductions in force, which has taken place over the last 2 years dramatically in the private sector. And do you see the federal government facing something like this?
It could. It very well could. Right. You know, some agencies like the Air Force, which just announced their second round of buyouts, are saying that they're trying to buy as an early outside is saying they're trying to do this so they don't have to get to the point where there are reductions in force. Agencies are stressing that what they're trying to do is make it voluntary so they don't have to force people out. But there's some concern that especially if these $1.2 trillion sequestration cuts come through, that buyouts and early outs may not be enough, and they may have to turn to RIFs and furloughs.
I mean, it would seem self-defeating that administration, which is – doing so much to create jobs that the administration and the Congress then turn around and force the federal government, the steadiest, safest employer in the country, to fire people.
That's right. You know, we had the job figures come out last week, and it was the nationwide job figures were looking pretty good. But one of the things that was kind of offsetting gains in the private sector was losses in state and local governments. And yeah, federal government could follow suit, and that could be act as a drag on the economy.
Well, a lot of our listeners, very heavy concentration in the Internal Revenue Service, a lot of Social Security people as well. Do you hear anything specifically about IRS or Social Security as far as buyouts and or layoffs are concerned?
Yeah, IRS is already off the, I think it was in November they began offering buyouts, and still trying to get the final number, but they were anticipating, according to the to Colleen Kelly, the president of the National Treasury Employees Union, they were expecting about 1,000 people to go out the door. And IRS, you know, in the FY12 budget, the Obama administration asked for about a 10% increase to IRS's budget, and instead they were cut about 3%. I would assume it's probably a pretty good chance you're going to see more in terms of early out or buyout incentives.
The other question we're getting, I didn't phrase well, is what areas will they be offering buyouts in? I think in the last round they kept it away from people who dealt directly with taxpayers.
That may be they're trying. You know, obviously, you know, improving service quality is obviously very important to them. I'm not familiar with the specifics, and the other area may be that where they might be able to be trying to protect people is in enforcement. You know, there's been a lot of talk of what's called the tax gap, you know, the difference between the amount of taxes that the public businesses, et cetera, owe and the amount they actually pay. And it's, I think, over $100 billion. And so they've been trying to, the administration has been trying to ramp up enforcement efforts essentially to make sure that the government, which of course facing this enormous deficit, is collecting as much money as it possibly can out of what's legally owed.
And I would add to that, you know, the thing about IRS, Social Security, and the agriculture, as we talked about, those are all agencies, and there's a few others out there that have direct service or offer direct services to the public. And they have offices, many hundreds and thousands in the case of agriculture, around the country. So their costs are enormous, both in terms of staffing all those field offices and in terms of overhead to keep those offices open. So I think we can expect to continue seeing a lot of drawdown and cutbacks for agencies like that.
And one thing I think is worth remembering is that some of these buyouts and early outs, the fact that they're bringing staffing levels down, may not necessarily be entirely a bad thing. You know, just yesterday the news broke that GSA is planning to offer buyouts to about 5% of their workforce. And when I talked to them, they said that last September they began kind of taking a hard look at their staffing levels to see how the jobs we do change. Are there some jobs that could maybe be done by people in a lower grade? Are there perhaps some jobs that we don't necessarily do anymore and we don't really need because the business we do has changed? And they came out with a very detailed list of agency of offices like Federal Acquisition Service, Office of Government-Wide Policy, the Office of the Chief Financial Officer, that they said where they see they could do some cuts. So it could end up allowing the government to kind of make the federal workforce a little bit more lean and more efficient. So that's one advantage to the buyouts, is that it's forcing the government to take a close look at what it has.
Yeah, I just have to add, following up on that, as part of this USDA streamlining, the department's going to be consolidating the number of cell phone plans it has from about 700 down to 10. And the question you have to ask is, how did they end up with 700 in the first place?
I was going to say, why?
I have no idea. I think it was probably everybody was out there doing their own thing. Nobody was really taking a look at the costs that were being incurred. And you have to assume that that going to a fewer number of plans will be cheaper in the
long run. Radio Shack had a great offer in Boise. You're talking about consolidating things. This is what the Postal Service is attempting to do. I know Sean and I were at a session with the Postmaster General, and he pointed out that there were X number of offices where the revenue stream was, and I'm making this up, but it was $12,000 a year, but it cost them $60,000 a year to operate it or something like that. So that would be a factor with all of these agencies, I guess.
Right, and there's a tension here, and it comes, I'm glad you mentioned the Postal Service because it's particularly acute there. On the one hand, Congress is cutting, telling agents to become more efficient. On the other hand, say like with USDA field offices, with post offices, with IRS service. The first people who are going to start screaming, if services cut or if their constituents feel any impact, are going to be members of Congress. And, for example, with the post offices, you know, according to the Postal Service, about 80% of post offices lose money if you look at what it costs to run an individual post office versus what they take in, what's taken in revenue. But because of congressional pressure, the Postal Service has frozen any closings of post offices until mid-May. As you might usually recall, back last year, they announced plans to look at about 3,700 for closing. And, you know, the study process is still going on, but nothing's – they're not going to close any until mid-May at the earliest.
I want to ask you something about buyouts when we come back from a break here on 1500 AM.
The Financial Safari Radio Show features some of the best retirement planners from across the country and is your source for a common sense approach to planning for a secure retirement in Northern Virginia. Contact the father-daughter retirement planning team of Don and Jill O'Rourke at 1-800-664-7505.
Tune in to the Financial Safari with the father-daughter team of Don and Jill O'Rourke, Sunday mornings at 8 a.m. right here on 1500 WFED.
Moving your enterprise to the cloud doesn't mean you have to let go of IT control. With BMC's proven cloud lifecycle management from IronBow, you can visualize and manage data and applications in public, private, or hybrid clouds through a single pane of glass. It gives you the control you need to deliver peak performance for users. Find out more about BMC Cloud Lifecycle Management and the BMC Public Sector Forum at ironbow.com. Keep your IT in view and under control in the cloud. Meeting Mission Goals Through Health, brought to you by General Dynamics IT.
Protected health information, or PHI, remains at risk as healthcare providers make the move to mobile. According to the second annual benchmark study on patient privacy and data security, 81% of healthcare providers say they use tablets, smartphones, and mobile applications to collect, store, or transmit health information. But 49% of those admit they're not taking steps to secure their mobile devices. Resulting data breaches and identity theft cost the healthcare industry billions.
General Dynamics IT is meeting the challenges of a complex healthcare environment that requires far-reaching experience and full-spectrum capabilities. Government, military, and commercial health payer organizations rely on General Dynamics IT's health services, solutions, and support to tackle their toughest issues. General Dynamics IT's broad understanding of healthcare data, military health missions, fraud, waste, and abuse protection, and more ensures support and innovation tailored to your real-world needs. Today's healthcare challenges are formidable. To learn more, go to GDIT.com.
Facing a new day, delivering services efficiently, improving citizens' lives, Booz Allen Hamilton supports the most important challenges of government, from defense and economic security to health and cyber solutions. Booz Allen strategy and technology consultants partner with clients to deliver results that endure. Whether managing today's issues or looking beyond the horizon, clients can count on Booz Allen to help them be ready for what's next. BoozAllen.com/ready for what's next.
Please join the American Federation of Government Employees for its series, Inside Government, brought to you in part by Purchasing Power. The weekly program gives you the real story on what's happening inside federal agencies and the rights of federal employees. Hear the latest from the nation's top lawmakers, celebrities, journalists, union leaders, and federal workers. Don't miss AFGE's Inside Government, Friday at 10 a.m., right here on Federal News Radio, 1500 a.m.
Hi, this is O'Donna Matthews. What does 3 decades of service add up to? For the Capital Area Food Bank, it includes these important numbers. Distributing 25 million pounds of food to nearly 500,000 people through a network of 700 partner agencies. 30 years, it's a long time. But the mission continues to make sure that no one is left hungry. To learn more, contribute, or volunteer, visit capitalareafoodbank.org.
Today, my journey to help save people money on car insurance brought me to our nation's capital. I was taking a stroll around a mall when I met a very nice gentleman from Ohio who asked me a question. What kind of word is Geico anyway? An excellent question, I replied. I told him that Geico isn't a word, it's an acronym, and it stands for Government Employees Insurance Company. I explained how Geico actually got its start 75 years ago to help federal employees save money on car insurance. Interesting, the man replied. But today, Geico saves lots of people money on car insurance, including me. Have you ever thought about changing the name? I said. It's a thought. But Gecko sounds like Geico. If we change the name, I might be out of a job. We strolled a bit more, stopped for some tea, and we both agreed. It's probably best to keep the name just like it is. Geico.
To get a free rate quote, go to geico.com, then buy online or over the phone. If you're a federal employee or belong to an association like Big, Few, Young Government Leaders, and others, you may qualify for a special discount. Contact Geico today to request your special federal savings.
This is Mark Amtower. I've been advising contractors for almost 30 years, and when they need agency contacts, I always recommend Carroll's GovSearch. With over 350,000 contact listings and over 1,000 government organization charts, they help you find the people you need to reach in all levels of government. Give them a try. Get a free organization chart and a sample listing from their database. Contact Gordon Peel at 703-757-8228. Carroll Publishing, bringing government to you like no other.
Welcome back to Your Turn. This is Mike Kogan. Glad to have you with us. Talking with Steve Watkins. He's editor of the Federal Times. Stephen Losi, senior writer. And Sean Riley, also senior writer. And between the three of them, they really cover the waterfront as to what's going on in the government these days. We're talking about buyouts before the break. And I was thinking back ancient history, the 1990s, when the buyouts started. And at that time, Congress had to approve each and every buyout. They first started in defense, and they were spread to other agencies. But it was a major coup for us, the reporters covering the beat, if we could find out an agency that was even thinking about asking for a buyout. I mean, they kept it very close to the vest for whatever reason, and yet we broke. You guys have broken the story, and the government executive and we did about GSA has said they've asked for a buyout authority, so they don't even have an assurance they'll get it. What's the change?
Well, I think the political winds are very different. I mean, for the last year plus, there's been a lot of criticism of the size of the federal workforce, a lot of criticism about how much the government is spending. And I think agencies are under a lot of pressure to show, hey, we're really tackling this. We're taking this budget thing very seriously. And so I think they want it to be out there that they're trying to be proactive and get a handle on the budget.
And we all suspect that more buyouts are coming. Can you think of any particular agencies that may not offer buyouts or early outs?
Oh, I don't know if I can. I think pretty much any agency is fair game. You know, if not soon, then in the future. I mean, there's as I mentioned earlier, the $1.2 trillion in sequestration cuts that may that are likely to happen unless some other deal gets enacted. And agencies are going to, you know, the staffing levels are where agencies go, you know, maybe not first, but one of the first places they go to try to find spare funds. So, yeah, I think it is likely to happen at most, if not all agencies.
Well, last year, we were all in a constant state of terror to varying degrees about what the Congress or the administration was going to do to the federal workforce. You had the Simpson-Bowles Blue Ribbon Committee, disappointed by the setup of President Obama. They were supposed to do something. They came up with recommendations, but nothing happened. Then you had the Biden group, the Blair House group of people from the legislative branch and the executive branch. I believe Congressman Von Hollen and others were on it. They were supposed to do something, and that just seemed to just disappear. It was like it wasn't like they even had a last meeting. Then you had the super committee, and I found you may have noticed my office is slightly askew, and I had some old newspapers there, and I found one from November, and it was saying that the Congress had agreed that whatever the super committee had recommended, they would approve, no matter how badly things were cut. Well, they fooled us by not approving anything. So, I mean, what makes us think anything this year will be any different?
Because the government is still facing a massive budget deficit. This issue isn't going away anytime soon. And the Republicans have clearly seen that federal pay and federal benefits are a lucrative source of funds to offset the deficit or pay for other items, and a politically safe avenue to pursue more funds. You know, just look at last month with the whole debate over the payroll tax cut extension. The House Republicans were pushing more of a pay freeze, and the 2 month extension didn't have any measures affecting federal employees. But I am very much anticipating that to resurface over the next month or two as Congress decides on how they're going to further extend this payroll tax cut. So it's just going to keep coming back.
I think to add on to that, I'm a little less sanguine about it. I think a lot of these ideas will still pop up, but I think one reason that we didn't see all that happen was because there was no grand bargain. And I don't think this year we're going to see it either. It's an election year. There's not going to be any big agreement until probably after the election. You know, maybe I'll be proved wrong, but when we get to that grand bargain, then we're going to see a lot of this stuff come back.
You're talking about things like raising the high three to the high five and a voucher system for health premiums, that kind of thing.
That kind of thing, and fundamental reform of federal pensions, yes.
And there's, I believe Congressman Issa has recommended eliminating the civil service portion of the FERS retirement benefit.
Yes, yeah. That's right. I mean, yeah, he wants to do away with the defined.
I mean, that's a sea change, isn't it? I mean, the FERS retirement system is half as good as the old civil service retirement system, but it's still about 100% better than anything in the
still
private
pension.
Sector. Yeah, that's right.
Yeah.
Guaranteed to know. Do you think that has a serious chance?
I don't think this year. I don't think we're going to see it. I think everything's going to wait basically until after the election because as of now it's basically gridlocked, and I don't expect to see anything change there, particularly on the big decisions such as that. What do we do about the federal pension program? Should we drastically reform it? I think the smaller stuff we still could see perhaps a chain COLA, I don't know, perhaps some other kind of middling kind of reforms, but I think anything major, I wouldn't expect to see that this year.
I think the big debate this year is going to be on federal pay. Last week, the news broke that President Obama is getting ready to propose a half a percentage point pay increase as part of the 2013 budget. This would break the 2-year pay freeze. And but even what Obama's proposing wouldn't be a whole heck of a lot for, you know, say I crunched some numbers for a GS-9. It would translate to about, you know, maybe $10 tops in your paycheck every week before taxes. So it's not a whole lot. But even some conservatives like Congressman Dennis Ross said, hey, that's too much. So
yeah, in aggregate, it's too much. Yeah.
Yeah.
Yeah, well, we did a survey here at Federal News Radio, and I think about 50% of the people who responded said it was insulting, that's a half percent. 23, and I'm making this up, but a large number said keep it. It's not even worth looking at. But some people are interpreting this as a good sign because what he didn't do was come out with a recommendation that they freeze federal pay, and that last year seemed likely, didn't it?
Right. Yeah. No, it was just enough to say we're going to give a raise, but not enough to really make any difference.
Right. And there is wiggle room, I would think, for the when the members of Congress come in and ask for pay raise parity with the military. Is it possible that feds will get 1.6 like the military?
I doubt it. I think I don't think the political will is there on Capitol Hill to go to the mat for pay parity. At least not for this foreseeable future.
The unions said they were disappointed. Yeah. And yet, as we know, in private, they're saying other things. But do you think they'd have had the same reaction if George Bush had been president? Would they have been disappointed, or would they be marching on the White House now?
I think they would have been more than disappointed. I think their language probably would have been stronger.
Yeah. How much clout do the unions have with this administration?
I think very little at this point, just because I think, as Steve says, the prevailing political winds are so much against them in terms of federal pay and benefits that I think they realize that you know, even staunch supporters like Steny Hoyer really adopt a very moderate tone in this climate. So I don't expect to see, except from, you know, a few members on the Hill, perhaps Senator Mikulski and others who are, you know, have long been very strong allies of federal unions and the federal workforce. I don't expect to see a lot of lawmakers going to the mat for federal pay and benefits.
Okay, because I was predicting today that this grand alliance might be revived from the Clinton and Bush years with Steny Hoyer and Frank Wolf, but you don't think it's going to be very strong.
I can't see it being very strong. Mm-hmm. I think Congress is just too divided over it.
Well, I guess the White House could always let them make all the noise they want and protest it if the gentleman's agreement was that nothing's going to be done.
And I think that's critical, is that the White House is not behind it. I think in past years, you would have seen the White House very strongly behind the federal unions. But right now, I think the White House sees that as a political liability.
Sarah Bonacero, president of the Senior Executive Association, was on earlier, the first part of the show, and she said that her feeling was that the administration was kind of hiding the accomplishments of executives. In just a couple of seconds, do you think that's true?
Sure. I mean, they actively do not even promote, for instance, the rank award winners.
Great. Thank you very much, General. We'll have you back next week, and everybody stick with us. Come back here next Wednesday at 10 a.m., and have a good week.